Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Jack Settleman, the creator of Snapback Sports, the place to go on Snapchat for your sports highlights, sports news, sports information. It's the number one sports page on Snapchat. And Jack is a creator who's built this page in the past 3 years and dominated it. I mean, he basically gave us in this episode his strategy, what he's done, how he's built the page, where he wants to take it. And he's gotten the opportunity to work at the Super Bowl and go to sports games and get paid for it, interview people like Mark Cuban and Gary Vaynerchuk, as well as some athletes. And he even has now gotten the opportunity to own his own football team, not NFL, but a fan control in the fan controlled football league. Anyway, we went into all of that. We also touched on NFTs and Web3 and how he's going to, if he's going to integrate Snapback and NFTs at all. This was a wide ranging episode, extremely insightful. And I'm incredibly grateful for Jack for coming on this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with somebody you think would enjoy it as well. I don't run ads on this podcast right now, so any way you could spread the message, spread the goodness of this podcast to the world, that would mean the world to me. And so, without further ado, this is Jack Settleman.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Jack Settleman, the man, the myth, the legend. It's an absolute honor to have you here, my man. Thank you for taking the time today.
I appreciate it. I'm very excited for this.
Awesome. Well, when I first met you, it was, one of these creator gatherings, something like that. And, you know, we just strike up conversation. You quickly tell me that you've been posting every day on the Snapchat account for, what was it, last 4 years? Like, a crazy number. And I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people might see your success of, I don't know how many million followers you have on Snapchat, and they might see that, but then what you quickly told me was, like, this is work. This is, like, every single day. So break it down for us, how you decided the output that you were going to post, and just, like, a little bit about Snapback Sports.
Yeah. So if you remember, the first thing I told you was you can't live above, like, 20th Street in Manhattan. And that is funny because now I'm looking for an apartment and the market's so crazy and I'm probably living up by you pretty soon. But after that, yeah, we talk Snapback. So the backstory is I grew up in a family business, a beer distribution. So my parents, my mom, my aunt, and my grandfather we sell beer to the Ravens and Orioles. Those are the two most notable clients. And so when the Ravens win, my mom is freaking out more than my dad, which is not traditional, right? The man in the sports and whatever. So I've seen sports business. So I was entrepreneurial, go to college at UT Austin, sophomore year, start a sports phone case company, and we're marketing through social media. I'm posting this stuff, but I'm really paying these other pages who had audience and were kind of selling the product. So I realized our margins are good on a case, but, like, our social media marketing costs are high. So why not build it myself? Instagram was busy. Twitter was busy. That's how I ended up on Snap. So that's the long story to how we end up as Snapchat. But this is before Instagram stories were really a thing in 2017, 18. And so the way the algorithm worked on Snap was, it was mostly kids. It was a younger audience. And so their day was, they are in school all day, and then 4 o'clock, they're out of school. And so that's where more content was seen. If you remember, I don't even know if people remember this. The old Snapchat used to be, like, top down with stories. So every time I post, I was the most recent, and that would put me up top. So that is how this came about where you need to put out a ton of content. Now, I could probably get away with posting a little less, but it will still push it towards the left now, which is the front of the line. And so that's why we post a lot, post every day, 30 minutes apart at most, sometimes every 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15. But we reset the feed at 4 o'clock, which is now just part of what we do, because I don't want people to watch last night's highlights at 3 o'clock today. They've seen it. It's gone through the news cycle. Everything's quick. And so we got to be fresh. So that's how I ended up posting every day forever, which is what it feels like.
Yeah, when you're in that cycle of you're literally posting all the time, like how do you deal with that mentally?
It has become second nature. My business partner, Alex Scheinman, he watches it happen, and he's like enthralled by the process, because I could literally right now, I could do this podcast and I could get like 3 posts up. It's become that bit of second nature, but it's definitely a skill that I've, you know, repped out over the past couple of years. So mentally, it's not too tough. I think like personal life, you know, sports go on at night and on the weekends for the most part. That's where my girlfriend would like to hang out, is at night and on the weekends. And so I don't really have a team who posts for me. I now have gotten to a spot where I can ask for help, but 95% of posts are still me, which there's debate whether that's good or whether that's bad, and maybe my time could be used elsewhere. I don't know.
What makes for a good post?
So there's a few elements to it. One is, you know, the caption. Captions, everyone has posted themselves, so they think it's not that difficult. I would say I've kind of mastered the art of what emoji, do you use a question in it, because that's going to earn more engagement, different stuff like that. And then the first second, especially on a platform like Snapchat, is so vitally important. I'm sure you're posting content now. You know exactly what it's like. And you know when something's going to be a good post or not. So I think it's just that intuition, and it's kind of going off your gut.
Mm. I feel like that's something that you develop over the years and has been, now it's second nature. Now it's easy for you to figure out. But take me through, like you mentioned the phone cases before, and I think you were doing shout outs at one point. And you were buying shoutouts, and then you realized, wait, we want to own the platform itself.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of people might look at that in that situation and say, you know, I don't want to do all that work. You know, that person who's creating that page is going through a lot of work. I don't want to do it. I'm fine paying for it. And I know you didn't like the business of e-commerce in general, but what made you say, like, okay, did you know the amount of work that was going to be required of the 30-minute posting? Like no clue. What did you expect definitely, going into it?
Yeah, I definitely didn't know that. I think one of the benefits was I invested probably a few $1,000 in being in college. That's a lot of money in building up at least the beginning of the page. And so once I'm financially invested, now I'm like, okay, I'm almost going to chase that so I don't have a loss, which helped. But I get probably 5 DMs a week. Hey, I just started a new Instagram, Snapchat, sports page. Like, will you shout me out? And I say to them, I would love nothing more than to shout you out. But you need to post for a year every single day. You need to record your podcast twice a week every single day. There's been one person ever who has come back to me. And I don't even think they made it a year. It was after 6 months, but that was the longest I had seen anyone go. So people definitely do not understand the amount of time and energy it takes.
Consistency is something that everyone can do, and it is the most underrated thing. And just to be at something.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, when you believe in yourself for 6 months or 3 months or a year, other people start to say, wait, that person believes in themselves to do 200 episodes of a podcast? Okay, they must have something here. They must believe very strongly, and therefore I should believe as well. And it's almost becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. But explain it to me from your parents' point of view, where you're going to them and they're familiar with sports, obviously very ingrained, but you're telling them, hey, I post these things. There are companies that are giving me money. Like, at what point did you go to them and say, like, this is what I got, and I really love this, and this is awesome?
Yeah, my parents have always been supportive, so it's not one of my grandmother, who is supportive in her own way, does still believe I should get a real job. There's no doubt about that. And when we're on the phone, I'm at the point where it doesn't bother me. There's no pressure on me. I know that I can afford to pay rent, and that's all that matters. But she'll be like, get a real job. I'm like, okay, Bubby, what's a real job? She's like, I don't know, like work for like a printing company. I'm like, okay, thank you. Thank you for that advice. That is what my skill set is specialized in. So while, I've had supportive parents, they didn't give me money when I moved to New York. So I still had a real job and I was doing Snapback on the side. So I started working at Action Network, which is a sports betting company. This is right after sports betting became legally federally, and now state by state is still growing. So for 2.5 years out of school, I was working a day job. Fortunately, it just kind of tied in, and the companies, it didn't really take up much time. But we got to a point, I've only been solo for what is essentially like officially a year now, last year, where it was very clear that I had the ability to go off and do this full time. And so they had that understanding as well. My mom is a little more cautious than maybe my dad. So she was like, are you sure? But it's been the best decision. And I think that's the thing, is sometimes you use that crutch and it really is a crutch and you need to kick that crutch and you need to go all in, because I could have easily, right? Like I couldn't do this podcast if I was still working my old job, because it's 2 o'clock on a Friday, I'd be working. So it's been a great decision, but I don't want everyone thinking like most people, they create content for a little, they go viral, then they quit their job and now they're doing this. No, like if you have to work the 9 to 5 to pay the bills, do that. There's a lot of paths.
So what has been the biggest challenge from going on your own now?
Oof, that's a good question. I would say figuring out like the business side of it. I've always actually preferred the business side. Being on the forefront of the content was never even really the goal. It just kind of fell into my lap, knowing that like personality is going to beat out business. It's why like a Barstool beats out an ESPN nowadays, because personality wins. Pat McAfee is so successful in the sports world. So the biggest challenge though has been like, I want to work on the stuff I want to work on, which is like doing this podcast or going to the Super Bowl and meeting fans and all this stuff. But like taxes and accounting and all that stuff, LLCs, like that is a lot of brain power. It's money and it's time, and it's just stuff that's unenjoyable. So do we scale the company? Do we hire for those positions? Are we in a position to do that? Do we take on outside funding? Calculating all those things and then supplying for what would be eventually a full-time employee, that's kind of the next challenge for us.
And how do you figure out those things that you're good at, but you need to delegate?
Yeah, delegation it's so critical. I mean, I said it earlier, like I still haven't really delegated posting to the Snap story, where someone could probably do 80% versus my 100%. It's probably worth it, but is it worth it in my own head? But it's just getting comfortable doing it. It's trying it. You can delegate and still be involved in something. And so there's a lot of situations like that. But I would love to get to a spot where I can fully delegate and I don't even know what's going on that side of the business and the job's getting done. And that takes a lot of trust. You got to find the right people for that.
I'm curious what somebody could get paid to post sports highlight, like what is that worth in today's marketplace of 2022?
That's a really good question. So Omar Raja, he started House of Highlights, and now he's getting paid $1 million a year to essentially create their content strategy at ESPN. He's best in the world at it. He's best in class. And I don't even know if he's posting them himself or captioning. He may just be setting strategy, but that's how valuable he is. Snapback Sports, for all those listening, will not be paying $1 million a year to post on the story. But it's a very serious part of the business, knowing the algorithm, knowing how to caption, knowing comments, all that stuff. So thankfully, when I started in social media, it was a little further along. They knew that resources had to be given to that sector of the business. They knew the importance. Now it's the main focus of a lot of these businesses. It's how they market. And it's not it used to be you can create a Twitter account for free. So why don't we have a ton of followers? Social media is free. Now people understand it takes a team, it takes resources, video editing, marketing, etc. So yeah, what would someone get paid to just post highlights for Snapback? Probably like $60,000 a year. And I'm sure there would be a lot of people who would sign up. But remember, I don't know what we can do legally in the state of New York. That's not just 9 to 5. That's 8 a.m. to midnight, all 365. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's crazy, though, how the passions and the people's truths are something you couldn't have. Imagine, like, watching sports all day. That's basically your job. And the fact that that could be a job in 2022, watch sports and post highlights of those. Speaking of the posting highlights, since you a lot of it is not original content, have you got in trouble with any leagues? Is there any copyright issues? Has any of that come up yet?
It's a good question. If you're listening to this from like the NFL or NBA, and you just leave us alone, please. I beg of you. I think, you know, it's interesting because we don't have the rights to do a lot of that stuff. So it's obviously a huge, that was probably the biggest risk when I left was like, okay, what if the NBA comes in tomorrow and says, please don't post our stuff. We could pivot. We could easily pivot into general sports content and not the highlights. And the audience would still stick around because they're just as interested in the off the field, the commentary. There's also an argument to be had that we are creating unique content with the captions to a lot of this stuff, although that probably doesn't hold up as much. And then we've worked with the NBA, we've worked with the NFL, we've worked with a lot of these leagues, so they're obviously aware of us. I think they turn a blind eye on purpose because we're spreading the game. I mean, we are only helping out the game, and Snapchat is more of like a private, I guess, in theory, domain than like Twitter, where shit would get retweeted and you'd have a lot of execs on there. So I think that plays into it. It's a bunch of different factors, but overall, I think they turn a blind eye because we're building the next generation of sports fans. And so they want them to be interested in their leagues. And I know for a fact, like, we've built Lamar Jackson followers, we've built Stephen Curry followers, we've built all these things that it's definitely beneficial. Now, if ESPN or ABC, who pays billions of dollars for the rights, went to the league and said, hey, they're taking this content, then we may fall into an interesting situation. But overall, I think like it's positive for all parties.
When you say you've built Steph Curry fans or Lamar Jackson fans, how have you done that? Just by posting their stuff? Like, what? How have you built their fans?
Yeah, so we build narratives around players. Mark Cuban, not many people know this. Mark has a social media company where they acquire pages because he believes so much in the power of memes. Like, we have memed Ben Simmons as a society into being a bad basketball player. Ben Simmons is an excellent basketball player, but you wouldn't know it just by Twitter and Instagram memes, literally. And so I'm a Ravens fan. I call Lamar Jackson the baby goat straight out of college because he got drafted by my team. And that's a real thing that people refer to him as and talk about in my community. And so people, either they love him or now they hate him because of me, which I think is polarizing in its own way. So we make people aware of maybe under the radar players, which we feel strongly about. They come on the podcast, they're even fully more integrated. So that's kind of how we've built up. Now, Steph would probably exist without Snapback Sports, but there's other players or teams that get showcased that the traditional media, because they're all algorithm based, aren't sharing as much.
Yeah, and you have, and that's what it really boils down to. It boils down to influence and people caring about your perspective on a certain topic or issue. And it begs the question of, like, how do you build influence?
Yeah, a lot of hard work, a lot of interaction with the audience. The whole thesis between starting Snapback was, like, social media failed us as a society. It was supposed to be so I could interact with you across the country and share my sports opinions with, like, the people I love, the athletes I love. But instead, Stephen A's on First Take. He says some dumb stuff like John Morant's better than Giannis. And then no one gets to actually debate with him. It's just the hosts who are being paid millions. He doesn't get on Twitter and fight back with fans. Meanwhile, on Snapback, I respond to the fans. I recognize I'm not someone who knows, you know, significantly more than anyone else or acts like it. I like hearing others' viewpoints. And so that is part of how we do it. My favorite story of like influence, I think, is it's a random one, but because the audience skews younger, Bill Raftery, his famous call is like onions, or put some English on it, right? He's got some epic calls as a college basketball announcer. So I posted it once, like onions, about some random college basketball shot, and everyone was like, what is this? What is this? And wow. So I just said, like, go on YouTube and look up onions. So if you search like Bill Raftery onions, the first video will have like 100+ comments of like, hear from Snapback Jack, like who's here from Snapback Sports. And so like that's meaningful influence, people who are truly engaged and care.
Dude, that's crazy, because my friend Stemp is listening to this right now, and we used to say onions back and forth to each other of in course. College nonstop. But speaking of influence and people actually caring, there's a video of you playing soccer, and there the comments from that, it was probably 10 years ago, and the comments are, oh, wow, this is Jack from Snapback. This is crazy. And there must have been at least, I don't know, I saw at least 20, 30, maybe there were hundreds, you know, and it's just like people care about you. And so what is that? It's that because you care about them? Like, what do you think?
So I think what you were talking about earlier, I think is super important here and vital, is like the consistency. Like you said, you do it for 6 months, you do it for a year, but people don't think you're ever going to do something for 10 years. Like people didn't think they were going to be on Twitter for 10 years, but they were. And if you showed up every day, you probably have millions of followers if you were tweeting useful stuff. And so I never thought I was going to be in content, but by having that soccer interview on YouTube from 10 years ago, it shows people like, oh, this was who Jack was before he started doing this and being consistent. So one of the things I wish we had been more consistent during COVID, we were doing the Madden League on YouTube. And so that's where people would search up like Jack Settleman or Snapback. And so that's how they found that video originally, which is funny that after so many years, it got discovered.
Yeah. Do you ever think about that as somebody who's creating something, like, oh, wow, you know, if I really become as big as I think I want to be, this conversation is going to get played thousands, tens of thousands of times. You never assumed that that interview you did after a soccer game would be seen 5,000 times, but here I am talking about it. So it's like, do you ever think about that as somebody who's creating stuff?
No, I had never thought about it. Definitely not at that time, you know, when I'm doing the interview. I thought my parents might watch it. And then even throughout building Snapback, I never thought about people would go back and find that, but they did. Now going forward, like legacy, and, you know, I'm only 25. I shouldn't really be thinking legacy, but like,
why not?
This is a type of conversation that I would want people to listen to, because I hope they can pick up something between us that I think will be valuable. And like Gary Vee, he's a very polarizing figure. I think he's super repetitive at parts, but like, just by picking up a few things from him during my high school or college days, like, I know that has helped. Bales's tweets, like, it's crazy. I was watching Jennings on Roto Grinders when I was 18 years old, you know? And so like,
crazy.
Now the full circleness of it all, like, we were never thinking about, but like him doing a 30-minute spot on like some NBA Roto Grinders, the way it's paid off, and that's what being consistent is all about, showing up every day. And that's why content can really carry you. You can hit people with different emotions and different tips. And so it is nuts. It is nuts how it all is like out there now.
Yeah. And that's one of the beautiful things about your life. When it really started to hit, it seems like you have so many moments like, oh my God, how am I living this life? How is this happening? I mean, the things you talked about, like, $100,000 contest. I don't know if it was a free throw contest or something like that with basketball. Yeah. Then you interviewed Gary Vee, you interviewed Mark Cuban. I listened to both those, excellent interviews. Everyone should check out. We'll link them below. But it's like, do you ever stop and think like, yo, how did I get to this point?
Yeah, I try not to, because I think that ruins it. Is like, you need to, look, we celebrate our wins. There's no doubt about that. But the problem is now that we've had these successes, the question is always, okay, what is next? Yeah. And to be honest, I've gotten really good advice of like, look, the goal is probably to scale the business, hire employees, build it. It's worth $100 million, right? Like the true new entrepreneurial American dream. But like people say, when you keep it small, you keep it tight. Like that's also fun as well. And so they'll say like, what do you want to do next? Well, if you had asked me 5 years ago, what do I want to do? I want to go to the Super Bowl and it be free. Well, someone's going to pay me this year to go to the Super Bowl and like put it on a camera. And so for that reason, I don't know if I'd rather hire a bunch of employees who are going to go and get to do that instead of me. Like now I'm going to be sitting at home making sure the partnership's going well, checking numbers. So I think like there, this is where I've always wanted to be. And so it is awesome. It is so cool. But I don't want that feeling to go away.
You know, Derek Sivers, are you familiar with Derek Sivers?
No.
Yeah, Derek Sivers is an incredible entrepreneur and he's a great writer as well. And his whole thing, he started this company called CD Baby and it was a very successful company pretty quickly. And there were investors that wanted to come in and they were saying, well, you could scale your business. You could do this, you could do that. And he's like, why? I like what I do now. Like what I do now is great and I'm enjoying myself. And it's like, what's the point of growth when what you're doing today is incredible and fulfilling and enjoyable and you don't even want to get to a next level because like the next level is the current moment. That's like a sense of enlightenment in a sense in business wise, right?
There's a famous tale, very similar, but it's like a fairy tale of like this Asian fisher, right? He wakes up at 6 a.m. He goes and fishes till noon. He, you know, brings in a fish. It's enough to feed his family. And then these Americans come in and they're like, why don't you scale this? You could work twice as long, bring in twice. And he's like, okay, so if I do that, what do I end up with? They're like, more money. And he's like, okay, now I have more money. What can I do with that money? And they're like, well, you could feed your family and you could fish more. And he's like, yep, I'm already doing that. Thank you for the advice. I'm going to stick with what I'm doing. So it is true. Like, it's rare that you find yourself satisfied in what the business is like. Now, we're trying to grow. We're trying to do more. But that doesn't necessarily mean we need to change a lot of what we do on a day-to-day.
Yeah. And I think the example of the Super Bowl, going to the Super Bowl being what you wanted, and then if you grow more, well, someone else is going to do that job and you actually want to do that job is like the real picture of what you mean. And so what other events, what other people, what other situations have you caught yourself in and been like, this is exactly what I want to be doing and I can't believe I'm doing it?
Yeah, I think sitting courtside at an NBA game was like totally something that I always dreamed of. And in my head, the dream was, okay, I make enough money to one day be able to afford courtside seats. But instead, you know, we had a brand pay for me to experience that. And so that's like an insane experience. I never pictured at this point I would have gotten to kind of enjoy. A lot of it is just going to games. I love sports so much because, and I use this example a lot, but Apple sells out of the iPhone 19. They sell 4 trillion, you know, pieces of it. And they raise more money than God, but no one's in that boardroom like high-fiving, crying, slapping each other on the butt. Like that's the passion of sports, and that's why I like it. So I love actually going to events, being part of the crowd. I've met so many people who follow me at games. Like that's always a wild feeling to know. And they're like, "You inspire me," and I'm like, "Like don't look at me. I shouldn't be inspiring anyone, but I do understand like at this point that's what it's come to." So those are the moments that are surreal when you can get 100 people to come out to a game and hang out with you. Like that's awesome.
Well, I was listening to one of your interviews yesterday and I was so surprised to learn that you said something like 70 to 90% of people have never even actually been to a sports game. That's crazy. Absurd to me, but it just goes to show, you know, what a fortunate position you're in if you actually have been to one of those games. And that the fact that you get to document that as close to the action as the referees is absurd.
Yeah. And I thought when I was at school, which is where this started, these snapback experiences, I never really, like, I grew up going to Ravens games because we had a partnership with the Ravens. And so it was from day one. And I recognized that was a privilege being able to go to a lot of games. But all my friends went to games. Like, you see, you know, there's 50,000 plus people there. So there's people that are going. But then you start to realize people will only get to go to, if they live in Oklahoma City, they'll go to one OKC game every 2 years. They're definitely not going to be able to go to the Super Bowl, March Madness, the World Series, all these different events, which I've been fortunate enough to go to. And so showcasing that stuff has been really cool. And a lot of people are like, okay, we can watch this stuff on TV, and I'm conscious of that. So I share the food, I share the environment, because that's what makes these great events.
Do you ever sit to yourself, say to yourself, wow, this is crazy that I get the opportunity to do this, but, you know, there are people, like, do you ever feel a sense of imposter of, like, I'm just a guy who decided to film a bunch of stuff, who decided to post content, like, anyone could do this, and that's the beauty of it, of social media in general, but, like, do you ever feel some level of, like, why me?
Yeah, I battle with, like, how much of this is a skill and ability, and how much of this could literally anyone do. And that's why I say, like, I do think someone could probably do this at 80% of what I do. Mm-hmm. But that final 20%, I actually know I'm talented. The problem is, in today's world, content creation is a skill that everyone covets, and you know if someone's talented or not. Content aggregation, which is what a lot of Snapback is, now that is slightly different. But I do believe there's a reason Omar gets paid $1 million. There's a reason that, you know, I was chosen as a successful Snap page, and there's other ones that haven't been. So the imposter syndrome, I think, is in a different form. But I'm confident at this point, like, no one, or maybe there's only a few people else in the world who could do this as well as I can.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what I love about your story and what you're living is you're really, from my perspective, living the dream of the 10-year-old self or the 13-year-old self, and you haven't let that kid in you go away. And that's such a beautiful thing. How would you recommend more people play to the 13-year-old self and to retain some level of childlike wonder about the world?
I think I got lucky. My dad is the same way. I mean, he runs his own company, but he is such a child. He says it himself, so that's not me putting that on him. But look, in the workplace, there are times where you have to be mature and you have to be X way. There's no doubt about that. You got to shake someone's hand firmly and you got to know how to behave, maybe not curse, stuff like that. But in my element, like, I get sent by a brand sponsor to go to, you know, a game, I'm still gonna, like, have fun. I'll drink, I'll eat, I'll be myself. And I think that's what people like, is this authenticity. You know, ESPN, they're not doing that type of thing. We like to know it's not a robot behind the camera. One of the things at Snapback that I know for a fact has been a differentiator is the fact that I'm super biased in my content, super biased. Like, most people are like, okay, LeBron, Steph, we're not going to be biased. We're just going to post. But, like, it's Ravens, it's Knicks, it's Texas. Like, it's and so the most engagement we ever get is when the Ravens lose a playoff game. Full stop. No other event will bring more engagement than when Lamar and the Ravens lose a playoff game every year. And I think that's a good thing, and that's what differentiates. And so that's my 13-year-old self. Sports fans are biased by nature, and the fact that a lot of these outlets act like they're not, and it's totally just up in the air, is crazy to me. So that helps me be a kid, is like I get to dig in and have my biases, and that'll just never change.
I love how your mom got excited when the Ravens won because that meant more sales. And for you, when the Ravens lose, it's more engagement. It's like, yeah, there's some level of irony there. But I'm sure if the Ravens won the Super Bowl, I'm sure that would be the most engagement ever, right?
It would be, I pray every day, if there was one thing I could pick, what that would mean, just to, because you have to understand, there's another element to, like, if the teams I root for actually happen to be some of the most polarizing teams in the world, the Ravens not necessarily, but the way I stamped the baby goat on him, and then the way people feel about Lamar as a running back, right? Like, that would be insane to shove it in their face. The Knicks, you know, everyone makes fun of the Knicks, so et cetera. But that would be spectacular, yes.
You know, one thing we haven't touched on so far is the sports betting aspect of it. And I recently talked about my own struggles with sports betting because it just got legal in New York. I found myself betting all the time. I'm like, oh my God, I'm still addicted to this thing that I was doing in college. And I'm curious from your perspective, if you've ever had any struggles with sports betting, how you know your limits, and like, you're so involved in sports and so immersed. Do you have any issues with being, you know, betting on games?
That's a really good question. I'm here to say I'm not a degenerate gambler or an addict by any stretch, but my grandfather wasn't a sports bettor by trade, but like, he was a really good gambler. So it's definitely in our blood a little bit. Love the craps table. That's where we like to play. So I think in college was betting, you know, through online bookies, and then may have partaken in the other side of the business as well, just because I think it's a really good business to learn. And then my first job was at Action Network. So not only am I in the sports world, but I learned at a very young and early age how sports betting works, how the lines are kind of functioning, why parlays are advantageous to the sports book, not you, even though FanDuel and DraftKings are going to shove it down your throat that everyone is taking 50 cents and becoming a millionaire. So very conscious about that. And I, once New York legalized, I definitely saw an uptick. Now I've very quickly like settled down, because I do think it is about just having some entertainment into the game. And so I was betting on Thursday night, you know, is Dwight Howard going to have over under 7.5 rebounds for a game I'm not watching? I'm just watching the box score. Like, that, I quickly remembered that's not entertaining to me. But the games this weekend, if I'm watching, yeah, I'll throw $50, $100 just for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, that's a good relationship. And I think it's one to monitor for a lot of people, especially we're talking New York here. New York recently legalized, and it's like, it's in my face more than ever. And it's crazy.
I'll say this. You know, being a bookie in college, I learned very quickly the house always wins. It's not even remotely close. Even if you think you're a good player, you might win for a decent amount of time. Give it a year, you will be down. So once I recognized that, I kind of understood, okay, you can only do this for entertainment purposes. And that's why I actually don't mind like when people do the $5 to win a million, because like, that could be just as entertaining as the $100 that I think I know something about the game. Whereas I think fantasy, like Underdog, who we're partnered with, that's a really interesting game because you can test theories and like, there's way more skill to that. There's skill to sports betting, but over time, realistically, you're probably not going to have your way.
Do you have any inside information being so close to the game and knowing players? Like, is there anything you know particularly about particular situations where you're like, wow, like, I'm going to take advantage of this?
No, I don't know how. I don't think they could get in trouble, but let's just say I had a friend at school who did not participate in the games, so I don't feel bad on this track, would simply send me a text message of like, oh, the team is fired up today, we're a lock, right? I'm not kidding. I think in all 8 instances, the team lost. So just for that reason, I know it doesn't matter if Tom Brady wakes up and says, I feel really good about our matchup. And if he texted me that, I still wouldn't bet the Bucks this weekend. I think the Rams are going to win. So no, there's nothing along those lines. You learn situational spots just from betting over time. Like NBA team, they're on a back-to-back, they're tired. You see it enough times, you start to, you know, it becomes natural. But no insider trading, unfortunately. I wish there was.
Because you've gotten to know some players, right? And you've got relationships with them. How has that been, personalizing the people that you probably once put on a pedestal?
Exactly. I think you said it perfectly. The second you talk to like four or five of them, you start to realize, oh, these are human beings. Like they were my heroes. Now they're just human beings, which doesn't make it less cool. It just puts it in perspective, which I think is awesome. It definitely changes how you think about like talking about them, right? Like you're not going to want to disparage someone as a human being just because their play on the field. Like, I think Elfrid Payton's the worst basketball player I've ever watched. But, like, as a person, he's a great human being. And so I think you have those conversations. It becomes easier. You also learn, like, a lot of them aren't going to be as cool as you initially built up in their head. They're excellent athletes, but, like, they're just another person. And so I've never had a Raven. I've never had a Nick, ironically. And we've talked to some pretty crazy athletes on the podcast. So that's still on my bucket list. But overall, yeah, definitely that's been the biggest takeaway is these people are human.
Have you ever changed how you posted about somebody after meeting them? For instance, I know that Bob Menery didn't cover Antonio Brown because of his relationship with him. Have you had any situations like that?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm trying to think if any of the athletes we've interacted with have had, you know, any negative like things like that. I would say maybe we avoided a post or two, but they're not watching the Snap story. They're mostly watching my Instagram or Twitter feed. So I feel less about that. We like to build them up, though. That is one thing that will happen. You come on the podcast, we will post when you do something, maybe when we wouldn't traditionally. So I think it's generally a positive experience.
Yeah. And speaking on making money, or at least through sports, kind of is the NFT project. Did you create Knights of Degen or a part owner? Like, what's your relationship there?
So I would say I'm part of the founding team. So the project was a little further along. Like, I wasn't in it from the absolute start of the ideation, but had been in Vegas with Drew Austin, who was working on it, got connected to Jared through Alex, who was working on it with him. And they just realized, like, I would be a good fit for them. I recommended Clay to come onto the team, and they were like, all right, you make sense. And so
Clay Thompson?
No. Clay, he's like Clay. Our community manager. Gotcha. Yeah. And so the initial concept was, do I think there's 10,000 or 8,888 people who would pay $300 to be part of a sports betting community? And I was like, for sure. Like, that is obvious. Blake Jameson, who I'd followed in sports cards, was the artist. So I'm like, all right, this is legit. And the leaders are not anonymous and they're CEOs and they run a venture firm. So I'm like, this is perfect for me. I would love to be involved. And where it's gone to is nowhere where I had any idea it would. I think when people are dropping projects, they're dropping two types. One, you're dropping art. You know how to market it because you're in crypto Twitter. You sell out and you hope it hits a hype cycle. Bored Apes hit a hype cycle. Doodles hit a hype cycle. And a lot of projects aren't going to do that. Our project, I hope, is going to bring you intrinsic value. We've got the IP of the FCF football team. We've got meaningful partnerships for our specific type of community. And so that is what I didn't realize. Like, you need full-time employees working day in, day out, and you are building a business. Just the front of it is like these pictures, but the back end, this is a full-blown business. So that's been a great learning experience.
Yeah. I think one thing that I didn't initially realize is, like, you could be committing to an NFT project and just think of it as like an NFT project. What you're actually committing to is years and years of work and building exactly. For people who own these things. So what's been the biggest surprise of being one of the founding members of it, of this team?
Well, I think it's that, which is all these people, including myself, got into it thinking, all right, we need to just sell out and then we're going to make some good money and then we'll figure it out from there. It's dangerous. And we're lucky because, you know, we did have at least a little more forward thought. But that is why, you know, Gary always says 99% of these are going to go to zero. Even the blue chips now, like Doodles, like that could easily go to zero. You have to provide as a business. This isn't Apple who's selling iPhones day in, day out. And people are only going to buy so many more NFT drops from you to sustain. So I think that's been the biggest learning is, like, we're having on-site meetings, we're having talks about hiring, we're talking about raising capital. Like, it's a legitimate business.
And so in these meetings, it's like, what is something that is being discussed that you are like, wow, I can't believe I'm in this meeting right now and we're talking about this? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I think when you're talking about building objects in a metaverse and having a knight's token, like, yeah, that is a bizarre concept, which I'm still confused or not, maybe not a believer in how soon a lot of this stuff's going to come to fruition. That's why the tangible stuff, the football team and the partnerships that we're actually doing are much more meaningful to me. While I do see a lot of projects saying, okay, here's our roadmap, we're going to build a mobile game. I'm like, what? What do you mean you're building a mobile game? There's like 12 mobile game builders in the world. They cost millions of dollars to make, and they're the ones who are good at it. You're just going to build it by minting an NFT? Like, I just don't believe a lot of that stuff. But the cool stuff is the interaction with athletes and celebrities who are buying into a project that you're helping build. Like, that is awesome, because when they come on the podcast, they're acknowledging your work and your reach, and like, you get to have a cool conversation. But actually taking US dollars or Ethereum and putting it into something you're building, that is what is really cool.
And how have you managed the NFT project and the Snapback Sports? Like, do you find connections for the two of them? And like, how do you go about merging the two worlds?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think they're separate to a degree, but I think a lot of the brands and companies we're working with have crossover. So if we've worked with a company like TickPick or Underdog, I think they make sense as a partner for Knights of DGen as well. And so we make introductions like that. FCF, I was through that, you know, with Snapback. And so that came about because of a relationship there and with Drew as well. So there is a crossover. It's very complicated. Personal branding, as you know, like, a lot of people's personal brands are tied to a bigger brand. We see that with me and Snapback. Like, people are always confused when you say Snapback, who are you talking about? It's mostly me, because I'm the forward facing talent. So yeah, there's totally crossover.
And when you see Snapback evolving, where is it? Is it going to be an NFT company? Is it going to be something else? Like, where is Snapback in, let's say, 18 months?
Yeah, in 18 months, I think what I'm starting to gain kind of clarity on is we want to create the next generation of sports fans. And what that means is someone who consumes the game in bite-sized pieces, who's not sitting on the couch for 10 plus hours every Sunday. And if they are, they're not watching, you know, Giants, Jags in a whatever game. They're watching Red Zone. And then that fan is also, they're consuming food that they associate with sports. And then they're also having a little action on it. And then they're watching sports cards breaks. And then they're watching all, you know, and so when we're thinking about who we partner with, that is part of it. And so in 18 months, how do we bring more stuff like that alive? I mean, 70% of people haven't been to a sports game. 99.9% of people have never been to a Super Bowl. I just got a call an hour before this. We might have a chance to send two people to the Super Bowl. And wow. So that is really, really cool for me. That's what building the next generation of sports fan is, giving people those opportunities. I think we can do part of that via NFTs, but I would want it to be accessible. I wouldn't want it to be a $10,000, you know, per NFT. I want it to be $100, and then we have a golf tournament, and then we have all these things, but you're bringing together like-minded, similar types of sports fans all together.
You mentioned partnerships, and I know you had one with Buzzr. What's going on with Buzzr? I'd never heard of Buzzr before.
That's a good thing. Now you know it. And now you're going to download the app. Buzzr, in its simplest form, I think right now, is like NBA Red Zone. So they're really taking advantage of, there's a ton of games on, and we're all really busy people. And we're going to catch a lot of the highlights on social media and maybe throw ESPN for an hour, etc. But like, you want to watch your favorite team and you're not a psycho like me who suffers through Knicks Timberwolves and Knicks Hornets all week. Like, you just want to see 5 minutes of when Steph is going for 50. And so they'll ping you. Right now they're doing a NBA League Pass free week, so every game is free, but going forward, you know, you pay 99 cents, you get to catch the last 20 minutes of these games. They're going to onboard WNBA, could work with others. And so that just makes so much sense to us, because we're highlighting these miniature moments, and fans want a little more than just a 10-second clip. So they go watch Buzzer, they pay $1, $2, and they get to watch the last 20 minutes of some of these games.
Dude, it's so crazy how the same thing happens over and over again. I'm reading about Jesse Itzler, and what Jesse Itzler did was he took private jets, and private jets were something that you could only buy by the by a massive number. And so, like, if you wanted access to a private jet, you couldn't just put a little bit down to get one of these. And so he's like, all right, let me make it easier for people, and so they could put less down so that it could be easier for them to gain access to something that they want. This is like the same concept for the common man. It's like, okay, you just want to, you don't want to watch all the NBA game. You want to watch a little bit of it. So you're going to pay a little bit, and you're going to get to gain the most important access of that game. It's fascinating.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think right now they're focused on the end of the game. Like, is there going to be a buzzer beater? Is Steph going to go for 50 points? But I talked to them, and like, the first basket, that's a real life thing in betting. Klay's return, that's a real life moment that people cared about at the beginning of the game. True. Other sports, right? There's so many possible, you know, opportunities with this. And so that's exciting. It's a really smart team. Michael Jordan invested, D-Hop, Morant. Like, it's a really cool company. But most importantly, it's like, it just makes sense for our audience. And so that's part of building the next generation of a sports fan. And so they made sense as a partner.
So how do you go about finding partners, or I'm sure many come to you, how do you go about evaluating this is somebody we want to work with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I'm always product first. So that's what appealed to me with Underdog. That's what appealed to me with TickPick, is like, their app is excellent and their messaging is quite clear. It's like, we're going to do best ball and we're going to do pick 'em. And with TickPick, like, you pay no fees. The price you see is the price you pay. That's it. That's all I have to message. So I was already using a lot of these companies' apps. So it's not really a sale. It's more like I am just exposing, because I have a large audience, to these things. And a lot of people just assume, like, oh, well, they've already heard of this. Like, no, the same way 70% of people haven't been to games, like 50% of people haven't heard of Buzzer. And so, like, just exposing them to a great option, exposing them to Underdog, is really, really valuable. And people don't see it as an advertisement half the time. They're like, oh, thanks for the heads up. Like, Jack just got us a deal, got us a discount code, got us a deposit code. It's a free app to use. Like, this is perfect. So when it doesn't feel like ads, that's the best partnership.
Yeah, and you know, I saw you advertising TickPick, and what I would love to see from you, maybe you've created this already, is just a video of like, why this particular brand or service, why did this resonate with you? Because I'm sure you get hundreds, thousands of pitches to you of like, you should work with me, you should feature my page here, you should do this. And very few of those, I'm sure, get to you, and you're like, okay, we're going to partner with this person because of how brand forward you actually are. So I think from the consumer perspective, I want to know why are you actually caring about this? Why did you use this before even sponsoring it? And and I think that'd be valuable.
It's a great point. And one of the things with Buzzer that I think the why gets lost is like, the team they have there cares so much more about, they don't care about building this app. They want to like change the world. And so they did a special thing for MLK Day. They donate to charities all the time. And so a lot of the time, like, it has nothing to do with the product. It's just like genuine good people. The people at Underdog are amazing. Like, these are great companies, and they're not slimy. They're not sketchy. They're just like really solid. And so if you use the product first, I think that's always a good starting off point.
So I know there's a lot of people listening to this who want to create content in the future, want that to be their job, want to immerse themselves in their own passion of some sort. And let's just say they just graduated college. What would you tell that person?
I would say the biggest tip I think I got was, you don't have to be entrepreneur. Being entrepreneurial doesn't mean you pay your own bills or you pay your own salary. It means being creative and building your own thing. So You can go work for a company and be entrepreneurial within. And you know what? You're going to get health insurance. You're going to have their resources. And if you fail, that's on them. It's not really going to fail on you. So I think that's really a good piece of advice is like, totally take the 9 to 5, 9 to 9 out of college. And in those extra hours, like start to develop your content, start to develop your craft, put everything out there. You can't be shy with this stuff. And the more you kind of put your goals out there, the more it'll take, people will take you seriously. And then you got to do it over a long period of time. There's content creators who were creating for 5 years before they were ever discovered. So don't sell out. Don't be, you know, don't think it's going to happen quick. A viral moment, actually, a lot of people are chasing virality, won't do anything. Like if you went viral on this podcast and you had the greatest clip with Mark Cuban, he retweets it, has 1 million views, your podcast listeners for that episode may jump, but like over time, it's only going to see a small little bump. And I think that's a huge thing is like, there's no real sense of virality because you can't build an organic, powerful audience in a viral moment. You need to be consistent. You'll see people have their moments. Drewski had a massive year and rode some crazy momentum. But day in, day out, he was creating content. He's being funny. He's traveling the world. He's partnering with all these companies. Like, it really happened over a year span. Being in a music video with Drake helped. But you don't end up in that music video with Drake without creating content for a bunch of years.
And that's the thing. It's like you create a bunch, and then when you have a viral moment, you have a library that people can go back on and say, wow, I really like this, this, and this.
Exactly.
And it's a very important thing not to get too attached or chase that. Do you have any particular viral moment of yourself when things blew up? Was there an inflection point that you noticed, or has it been very steady?
That's kind of the crazy thing. I guess that's my perspective is like, I never went viral. Like we've had TikToks do 1 million or so views, but it doesn't give us 1 million followers. Snap doesn't have the ability to go viral. So that's where I guess a lot of this comes from. Don't get me wrong. Like going viral and hitting the algorithm is super valuable. You want to make your content to do so. But I never really had a viral moment. The success was quick, but it was all kind of planned. Like in the old days of Snap, you could buy shout outs. You would gain 1,000 followers. I would then go to a sports phone case company just like mine, say, hey, give me $50. I'll post it. I took that. Took the money, bought another one. So that build up kind of snowballed into the following. But no, definitely no viral moment. There's important moments that put you into a new kind of level or tier, like playing in the House of Highlights, right? Competition associates me with a bunch of great creators. Going on ESPN Snapchat story associates me with a really strong brand. So there's moments like that, but there's not like this one piece of content and then 1 million people started following me.
It's fascinating how the platform that you start on is almost a way and a lens through which you see the world going forward. And speaking on that, going forward, what platform, you know, it's so interesting when I tell people, you know, where do you want people to follow you? Where do you want, it's very rare that someone says Snapchat. And obviously you know that, but it's still a found success. That's incredible that you have. So it's like, where is the world going? And where do you want to be building so in 2025 you're in the best position?
So that's a really good kind of thought starter. And I think everyone who's thinking about doing content needs to evaluate that. So just straight off, like, how could I get the most followers in the quickest period of time? Go to TikTok. That is the one platform that is still out there where you can genuinely go viral right now, today, with really strong content, really hard work, and you can grow a following. After that, maybe you kind of lead to YouTube Shorts. It's a very similar strategy. You can hit an algorithm, you can do something. So that would be my advice on that. But if you want to be someone who's a thought leader, or you want to be someone who's like meeting with VC firms and who's an angel investor, being viral on TikTok could be valuable, but you would rather have 10,000 people listen to your podcast and 100,000 people who follow you on Twitter. So that is very important as well. It's like, does it even matter if I'm viral over here? Because I've seen a ton of creators went super viral on TikTok, but you can't monetize it, and it's not a true following, so no one's following them over to Instagram or Twitter. And at that point, it's like, well, it doesn't even matter that you have 100K on TikTok, because no one cares about your stuff. When you post an ad, it absolutely flops. You have no true influence.
It's fascinating, because one thing that I keep thinking about is a Jordan Peterson quote, which goes something like, don't practice what you don't want to become. And it's like, if you want to be in the VC world and you're going on TikTok, it might help your creative muscle and you might build something, but it might not be serving the type of person you want to be in the future. And so, Absolutely. So that leads me to ask, how has growing the Snapchat page led you to be a different person? I know for me personally, growing this podcast and communicating, it's changed me. I'm a better communicator, I'm better at asking questions. And that's just what's going to happen if you do something 200 times. For you, how has posting on Snapchat changed you as a person?
That's a really good question. Probably something I don't think about a ton. I would say, top of my head, I've gotten really good at just like knowing, having the pulse. I have a pulse on a lot of things that, once again, I think Gary Vee talks about it a lot, where he's like, I have to be in Discord because I need to have a pulse on things. So I have a really strong pulse on the sports world. And so people will joke, like, they'll send in our group chat and I'll be like, yeah, I saw that like 20 minutes ago. I saw it yesterday, right? And so I think that's just a natural feeling of having a pulse now and going with my intuition. So that's changed me a little bit. It's definitely got me attached to my phone more than I should probably be, but I think it's a good and a bad. If you can kind of enjoy your life, then who's to say, like, you know, when someone else gets off work and scrolls Instagram, they're on their phone. I'm on my phone, I'm working, but I'm consuming Twitter. Does that really work? I do think Twitter is like the most underrated value tool in the world. You're hearing shit from people that, like, you're getting insane, thoughtful content that is so valuable. And if you just follow the right people, that's another thing. It's like, it's changed me into being good at curating a feed. And, you know, my business partner's always like, Jack, I need you to take my phone and follow the right people. And I never realized, like, that's an ability. That's a super valuable tool, but it is. And you're constantly reading the new stuff. I've got pro athletes texting me right now. How do I know which projects are going to blow up? Now, I'm not like some Nostradamus who's like, okay, this one, this one, this one. But I at least like have an incredible pulse on when new projects are launching. And it's, you know, I follow Lucky Trader. I follow all these places that are super valuable that are second nature to me. So that's kind of how it's changed me.
It's fascinating. So how do you think about what people to follow?
I am not someone who really cares about my like ratio, and because I've gotten good at consuming a lot and processing it quickly, I follow like 2,600 people on Twitter. I follow thousands on other platforms. So I'm pro following more than maybe you should. You can throw tweet notifications on for people. You can subscribe to different things. You don't have to read every single tweet from every single person, getting bite-sized pieces of it, but really mastering that skill of like processing what's valuable and what isn't, super important.
Who are the people that you look to and you say, okay, this person's really on the pulse? Does anybody come to mind?
Oh, that's a tough question. No, I don't think there's a specific person. I think it's kind of mashed up into different segments of business. So this person who's texted me was like, you know, who should I follow? I'll send them 8 names and NFTs, and like some will just be brand accounts, some will be people, some will be shit posters, because I think having a pulse on the culture is just as important as like a valuable insight. So there's not like someone who I would say is the number one follow on any platform. I think Naval is probably the person I would highly suggest. I know he released like those short lessons of life or whatever it was, and you can kind of read through those or listen through those pretty quickly. Those are really thought-provoking, but on a day-to-day, I think it matters what you're looking for.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating, and I'm curious about owning going in a different direction. I'm curious about owning the sports team and the football team and what that's like. And if you could imagine a world in which the sports team that you own is equivalent to, let's say, the NHL, right? Where maybe it's not the biggest, but like it has weight. Like, is that even possible? And so tell everyone a little bit about the sports team.
Yeah, I don't think it was a goal of mine. Like others will say, like, I want to buy a sports team when I grow up. To be frank, like, the valuations of these teams, I unfortunately don't anticipate I'll be able to acquire one day. But it's definitely cool feeling that sense of ownership over a team. But the FCF in particular, I saw the concept. I thought it was really cool. I don't think they're a competitor to the NFL. I think they're a different type of league. They're on Twitch. They're more about video games. They're more, and so the fans of my audience were always debating, should the coach have called a timeout? Should they have run a draw, Mike McCarthy? Should they have done these things? And so when I saw Fan Control Football, I'm like, I'm all about the audience. This is perfect. So we connected. It got me linked up with Austin, who's awesome, and Greg Miller, who's awesome. And so once I saw that, I was like, all right, this league has some legs. I want to be a part of it. Say I own a football team. But then the actual making me feel like an owner, you know, the people at the league, like, they booked me a flight, a hotel, a black car to go to the game. And even that, putting me in an owner suite, I was like, all right, this is it. This is all I need in life. Free food for, you know, a couple Instagram posts was excellent. So if the league went absolutely bonkers and
could
became
you imagine?
A serious competitor, it would be nuts. It would be really, really nuts. And it's not like I have some stake in the Knights team that's like 50% and I'd feel like a majority owner and people would tweet it. But like, it's a cool feeling to be part of it. And I think FCF recognizes that. They are letting people buy shares into these teams on Republic for like $150 to get a share. So even little stuff like that, like, I fell for the Packers marketing scheme. I'm a part owner of the Packers right now. So we got a big playoff game on Saturday. But there's something to it. There's something very cool to it.
What was the Packers marketing scheme like?
So the Packers are the only public team in the NFL, and because of that, they can offer shares of their team. And so they just initiated a new offering of shares to fundraise $30+ million to build like a new part of their stadium. And so I have here, hold on. I have like the like the little share thing, it says, you know, you are a shareholder and all of that. So what do I actually get with it? Nothing. It's actually a really bad purchase. I threw $200 straight in the trash so I could send out a tweet that I'm an owner of the Packers and talk about on this podcast. Even worse, they could actually fine me up to $50,000 for stuff I do. They can buy the share back for $0.50 the day after I bought it. So that's what I mean when I fell for the marketing scheme. But like, overall, there is that feeling of like, that's what's crazy about sports. It's the passion for it. This isn't going to return a singular dollar, but like, just being able to say you own the Packers, there's value to that.
And I think that it also speaks to the importance of community and getting people involved in the whole Web3 world. It's like, the more people you can get engaged in a movement, the better. And that's what, it's like, you can meet somebody on the street that's like also a Packers owner, and now you have an immediate bond of connection. Yeah. And it's a beautiful
but
thing.
But that's where Web3 takes us to a whole nother level. Like, there's no reason this should have no value. I spent money on it. I am a huge fan. I should have an opportunity to be rewarded in the future. And so, look, now you get into securities laws and tokens and stuff gets complicated. But there's no doubt in my mind that I shouldn't be able to truthfully own a share of the Packers. And if they ever got bought one day, I should be able to get money back. Because of how good they are, because of how much money they sell and tickets. So that's what excites me about Web3.
Is that there's going to be opportunity for people who are involved in a community or help build something up to gain profit and gain value from that. It's going to be a whole new world, and I can't wait to see sports teams that are formed as first their NFT projects. And imagine Bored Ape buys a buys a sports team. Like, that's not that crazy.
Has they got an FCF team? So we're starting off. Yeah, it's us. So their original four teams last year, I was part of the Wild Aces. I've now moved over to Knights. We're the fifth. We're an NFT team. It's Aoki and 888. It's Gutter Cat and Bored Apes. Now, the Bored Ape team isn't, I think, like the official whatever labs. It's just some Bored Ape owners who have built brand and IP. But there's Bored Apes associated with it. We're going to beat the shit out of them. It's going to be great.
Oh, my God. And where are those televised?
So the games are on Twitch. This year, I think it's announced that they're partnered up with NBC. So I don't know if it'll be on like NBC Sports, but it'll be on like their OTT platform. I think it's called Lux or something like that.
Well, dude, if this platform and if this league really takes off, you better not forget about me and the little guys who are supporting you before.
Yeah, they had me on a broadcast last year, which was hysterical. Like, on the live Twitch broadcast, broadcasting of 50,000 people talking about the Aces and the ownership. I got a headset. I got a producer in my ear. And I'm like, damn, this is crazy. This is what feeling like an owner is.
What's something that in 2032 you think will be part of society or culture that we might not initially think? You know, the world in 2022 is so different than it was in 2002. So many things. But what's something you think in 10 years, which will be, it'll be normal, it'll be accepted, that today we might think is a little weird?
So I think we're moving towards it. And I think we have kind of built a little bit of it. But I think everyone's going to work for themselves at least a little bit. Like, it wouldn't shock me if everyone had a token and that token's value was literally tied to them, and like based on content creation, based on if they're a good plumber, based on all these things, you would like there's a lot of world where you interact with other people, and like just because they have a corporate structure, you work with companies, but you're really working with other people. So I could see something along those lines of just way more people on their own. It's funny. I work in sports. And so what's the worst thing you can do as an athlete? It's leave your team and join a super team like Kevin Durant, like LeBron James, right? You get called a wimp. You get called a snake, all these different things. In the business world, there's literally nothing smarter to do than to create a super team.
Wow. So it's funny. I never thought about that.
Right? It's like, you're working at this company, you're working for your local news station, you're going to go work for ESPN, you're a snake. No, it's like, that's an incredible career move. Kevin Durant's career move in the business sense, like, that was unbelievable. He became the best player in the world on the best team. And so I think that's where you'll see people starting to identify as talent, and they'll start to create these super teams and work together in business. We're already seeing it. We know all the top business people work together, but let's encourage that not at the CEO level. Let's encourage it at level 1, 2, 3.
Well, Jack, if this conversation is any indication, I'd love for you to be on my super team. This has been, yeah, man, this has been a lot of fun. Do you have any final closing pieces of parting wisdom before we go?
Parting wisdom. That's a really good question. I would say the biggest thing for me right now is like, I'm in a really good place mentally. Mental health is so vital to everyone's lives. You'll notice very quickly the richest people in the world are very unhappy. And so if you are happy, be thankful for that. If you're not, try and do everything you can to get to that place. Going to the Hamptons every summer can wait. But waking up every day and actually feeling joy, I think, is way more critical. So that's another thing in 2032. I really hope that mental health continues to be built upon. There's more tools. Like, I would love, I think, like, building out a therapy tool is so useful to make that accessible, because a lot of people who are wealthier, they have access to it. A lot of people who really need the help don't have access to it. And we need to destigmatize it along the way. The way that the avocado business has created avocados into such a cool thing, like, I would love nothing more than mental health to fall into that category where you tear your ACL, you know, you're out for the season. Calvin Ridley, his mental health, he tore the ACL in his brain for this season. He's out. He's getting the help. So I think it's awesome what he's done, and I hope that, you know, overall. So if anyone's building any of that type of stuff, let me know, because I'm pretty passionate about that.
Awesome. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. What a beautiful way to come to a close. And where can people connect with you further, Jack?
Yeah, at Jack Settlement, like I said, I do see most things. So I love DMs that are interesting. I'll connect people. That's where you can find me, Twitter, Instagram. And then if you like sports, at SnapX Sports, follow us wherever. But I really appreciate this, Danny. This was awesome.
Yeah, we'll link all those below. Thanks, Jack, for taking the time. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast, listening to me ask questions to Jack Settlement, and finishing the episode. Thank you. If you enjoyed it and you got value, please go to your favorite app right now, whether that's Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, and share this episode, whether that be through a direct message or that could be to your entire feed, to everyone. Put it on your story, tell the world, let people know about this episode if you got value from it. I certainly got a lot of value from it. But if you don't want to do that, just hit me up on Twitter about your thoughts about this episode. I can't wait to hear what you think about it at Hey Danny Miranda. That's all for me. I hope you have an incredible day or night, and I will see you in the next episode. Peace.